Hey, future doctors. Thanks for joining me on Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Rhea Mulherker. I am currently a radiation oncology resident in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I will be your host today. We have been doing some specialty exploration here on Spoonful of Sugar. We had an episode learning about radiation oncology. Previously, one of my medical school colleagues was featured talking about ophthalmology. Today, I'm really excited to be featuring Dr. Chithi Parikh. She's a special guest. She's a founder of the Integrative Medicine and Wellbeing Institute at Cornell Medicine in New York. And she is here to talk about what every medical student needs to know about integrative medicine. I think that Dr. Parikh is just an incredible example of what it means to be a physician and what kind of care we should be providing our patients. Before I did this interview and so Dr. Chithi Parikh actually recently published a book as well called Intentional Health. And before I read this book, before I talked to her, I didn't have a good grasp of how we can kind of incorporate some of these integrative medicine strategies, this holistic medicine. There's an idea of Ayurvedic medicine from India, a practice which has been, you know, going on for centuries. It was tough for me to visualize how all of that could be kind of incorporated into our modern day traditional medicine that we think about in the Western world. And so I think that Dr. Parikh has a lot of insight to offer in that regard. She has a lot of career insight as well. You know, she started out as a hospitalist and then found her way into this niche. So I think there's a lot to learn from her. I also think that all specialties can really benefit from understanding some of these integrative approaches and how we can kind of help our patients in a more holistic way. Not just primary care, but even in my own practice as a radiation oncologist, I think I took away some things from this interview that I can be applying into my patient care strategies. And so I'm really excited. I think this is going to be a really great topic. I think integrative medicine is something that all of us as medical students and residents should definitely be aware of. And so without further ado, here is Dr. Parikh on what every medical student should know about integrative health. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Dr. Parikh. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this very exciting conversation.
Awesome. Yeah. So just for all of our listeners, a little bit of background. Dr. Parikh is here with us as a guest on our podcast today. She's trained in internal medicine, and then she is the founder of the Integrative Health and Wellbeing Institute at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York Presbyterian Hospital. And she actually recently published a book called Intentional Health, Detoxify, Nourish, and Rejuvenate Your Body into Balance. So really excited to have you here today to kind of talk a little bit about your field and your specialty and also tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, I'm so excited. There's a lot we can cover, and I'm glad that it's the right audience that I always love to talk to. So,
awesome. Dr. Parikh, I was wondering if we can start out. Can you tell us a little bit about your training and your journey through medicine so far?
Yeah. So I went to medical school in New Jersey at Rutgers Medical School, which is called Rutgers Medical School now. And actually, before I went on to medical school, I actually took a year off, a gap year. And I went traveling, I went backpacking through Asia for a year. So that's where I really got to see a lot of the Eastern medicine practices. So I did, you know, I did everything from spend time in like silent meditation retreats to some, met some yogis and monks. And I also partied on the beaches of Thailand. So I did it all. But that really, I think that experience really shaped how I thought I wanted to practice medicine. So I went on to do my medical training at Robert Wood Johnson, which is Rutgers Medical School. And then I did my internal medicine residency at Cornell in New York City. And I stayed there. So I'm now currently a professor at Cornell Medical School. And I also run this program called Integrative Health and Wellbeing. So that's how I came to it. But actually before, you know, after residency, I practiced as a hospitalist for several years. So I was practicing in the hospital, taking care of very sick patients. What I found was that I didn't feel comfortable being a doctor that people went to only when they were sick. I really wanted to be the type of doctor that people went to stay healthy. And I found that our medical school training, our residency training, didn't really equip me with the knowledge I needed to be the kind of doctor that helps people stay healthy. So that's the reason why I really explored options, looking into integrative medicine and see how additional training and additional, education can really help me be that doctor.
That's awesome. And yeah, that's so true. Oftentimes as physicians, especially in the hospital setting, you just see like the sickest of the sick and you don't see kind of the preventative measures. I'm just wondering, how did you, so it sounds like that interest in integrative medicine kind of even developed before med school even started, but how did you then transition from being a hospitalist to getting involved with integrative medicine in your daily practice?
Yeah. So as a hospitalist, I did additional coursework. I did integrative medicine on sort of board certification exam. Now there's actually a 2-year fellowship online that you can do. And what I did was one of my mentors said, you're really passionate about this. Why don't you just create a business plan to open an integrative medicine practice within Cornell near Presbyterian? And I dabbled, my undergrad major was actually finance and management. So I used some of those skills to put together a business plan. That's not something, again, you were taught in medical school. And I pitched it to our chair of medicine at that time, the CEO of the hospital. And it was just, I just got lucky. And they said, okay, this sounds like a great idea. Go ahead and build the program. So I just sort of, it was almost like starting a, working in a startup, and you were like starting a startup in a huge institution, right? In a traditional academic medical center. But I knew that the work I would be doing wasn't just for me or a few patients. This, if this worked out, it could potentially change how medicine was practiced in the country. So I knew a lot was at stake. So I started just seeing patients in the outpatient setting, focusing on preventive care, focusing on more sort of root cause analysis rather than just treating with just medications. And then it grew from there. So we had 2 physicians to start with, then we added on acupuncturists, we added on nutritionists, psychologists, yoga, meditation instructor, Qigong instructors. So then it became a full-on program where someone can come in, get a consultation, and spend time with any of these providers, and we create a customized treatment plan for them.
That's so awesome that you created that there. And it sounds like it is changing the practice of medicine. What does your day-to-day practice kind of look like, and how do you incorporate the integrative medicine into it?
So currently, we spend about an hour with each patient, with all new patients, and 30 minutes with our follow-up patients. So I'm sure in medical school residency, you learn how to take history and physical, right? So you talk about family history, medical history, allergies, and all of those things. We take it much further than that. So I always say, people always ask me as an integrative medicine doctor, do you do more GI? Do you deal with cancer patients? What kind of patients do you see? What symptoms, what diseases do you address? And I always say, I don't treat any diseases. I don't treat any symptoms. I treat people. So 2 people can walk in, you look at their chart and you say, both of these people have diabetes. Okay, both of these people have high blood pressure, whatever it could be. The treatment plan they're going to walk out with could be completely different. So I spend a lot of time to actually get to know the person in front of me and figure out, how did they get here? What were the risk factors? How did they grow up? What were the food choices? Where do they live? What kind of grocery stores are in the area? What kind of food do they like? What do they don't like? How much time do they have to cook? How stressed are they? How much community support do they have? Right? These are the things that we really talk about. And then something I train my students and residents in, and I say, the books will only teach you so far, right? Books will say, okay, diabetic, give them this prescription, put them on a low carb diet. Okay, fine, you did your job, right? But 2 people can walk in with diabetes. 1 person does not cook. They work, long hours. They have a long commute. They don't have time to cook. So how is someone like that on a limited budget supposed to stick to a low-carb diet, right? Mm. So I will go as far as I'll say, hey, if you're busy and if you only have money to eat at McDonald's, let's come up, what are you going to order at McDonald's? What are things that you should be ordering? Okay, you can get the fish sandwich instead and take the bun off, take the bread off, and order some of the side salad. Right? So it's like, so we're trying to be creative and match solutions to the person in front of us, not just saying diabetes, here's a metformin, here's a one-page instruction on how to follow a low carb diet. So I hope that makes sense, is that we're actually practicing the art of medicine as much as the science of medicine together.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it's really nice that you're doing that for patients and that you're kind of allotting that extra time, even when you see them, that one full 1 hour consultation, so that you can kind of in-depth explore specific interventions and how they would fit in with their lifestyle and their kind of socioeconomic status and things like that, which is awesome. Do your patients kind of specifically come to you for integrative medicine interventions, or do they come to you more for primary care? And you kind of incorporate the integrative things into that.
So we typically do not do primary care. So almost all patients that we see have a primary care doctor, and they often see multiple specialists as well. So our goal is to really focus on everything that our traditional primary care doctors don't have time or the training to do, or a specialist, right? So we get a lot of referrals from other specialists because, I remember in medical school, I got a total of 4 hours of education on nutrition in 4 years, right? Yet we know that diet and lifestyle changes are first line therapy for pretty much everything we see these days. So I understand as a primary care doctor, if you're seeing 20, 25 patients, you don't have time to sit there and talk about nutrition, right? So they will send people to us so we can do a deeper dive. And not everyone is looking for this, right? Not everyone is willing to make these changes, but people who are truly motivated, we need to make sure that we're giving them all the knowledge and support that they truly need. So that's what we do, is we really act as a consultant, and we try to focus, identify a goal together with the patient. I might focus on their high blood pressure. I might say, oh, you really need to lose 20 pounds. We really need to get the blood pressure under control. But that's not what the ultimate goal is. I talk to my patients and say, what is your motivation? And they'll say, hey, I have my daughter's wedding coming up in 6 months. I want to be able to look good. I want to be able to dance all night. Okay, great. Let's make that happen, right? So then we can focus more on physical activity, some diet. So we're using the motivations that someone is coming in with and using that to empower them and educate them on making sustainable lifestyle choices.
Gotcha. That's awesome. And actually, I'm reading your book right now, and I'm almost done with it. One of the things that I really love about it is how you give kind of these specific case examples of patients with like real medical conditions that you've helped. I was wondering, can you actually maybe give us a case study? And I know you kind of did that with the diabetes, but if you can just give us another example of like a case study where a patient had a condition that primary care physicians deal with and that you kind of intervened with the integrative medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. So in our practice, I love, I always say that I practice 5,000 years of medicine. And so I will combine something very cutting edge with very ancient sort of Eastern wisdom together. So because why not, right? There's evidence behind all of this, so why not combine it? So I'll give an example. Recently I had a patient. She was in her, late 40s, early 50s, going through perimenopause. So her periods were starting becoming irregular. And she noticed that even though she was eating a healthy diet, exercising, she was starting to gain some weight, and she was having trouble losing it by just, calorie restriction or exercising even more. And then she got blood work recently with her primary care doctor, who said all of a sudden she was pre-diabetic, her cholesterol was a little bit higher than it ever been. So she came to us saying, hey, I'm doing everything I can. I'm trying to exercise more. I'm trying to eat a healthy diet, but like, these numbers are going the wrong direction. Like, what can I do? So we said, okay, let's customize a treatment plan for you. So what I did was I actually had her put on, her doctors were actually suggesting that she go on like Ozempic and like three other medications, a statin, metformin, and all these things. And she was like, I've never taken medications until now. Like, I do all the right things. Like, how did it happen to me? Right. So it's kind of be discouraging. So I said, all right, why don't we do this? Give ourselves 3 months. And I put a continuous glucose monitor on her, right? So this way, she was able to see how different foods were affecting her blood sugar. And we know that especially for women, when they enter perimenopause, as the estrogen progesterone starts to go down, their insulin resistance starts to go up. So basically, they could be eating the same food, but how their body metabolizes those calories, they're more likely to store more fat. have higher levels of inflammation, higher levels of cholesterol. So we said, why don't we actually, instead of you just eating salads all day, why don't we actually put a glucose monitor on so you can see how different foods are affecting you and you can customize your diet based on that. So we had her data to see, and she said, oh, I was eating this oatmeal every single morning thinking it's good for me, you know, it's going to reduce my cholesterol. And she realized the oatmeal in the morning, even though it was steel cut, she was cooking it, everything at home, it was spiking her blood sugar so much. She said she even had a chocolate cake the other day, and she said the oatmeal was spiking her blood sugar as much as this chocolate cake that she had for dessert.
Wow.
So her body was basically reacting as if she's eating chocolate cake every morning for breakfast, right? So that's what I mean. Like, without this data, we don't know what's actually a better fit for her. So what she realized is that she's better off doing more chia seeds. I had her add more protein and fats into her oatmeal that helped balance her blood sugar on. We had her do more eggs with like a frittata in the morning with a lot of veggies. And she was amazed that within a month, she started losing weight, percent body fat started to go down. She actually had more energy, better mood. And I also combined the Eastern medicine knowledge. We know that intermittent fasting is very important. So I said, okay, let's come up with an intermittent fasting window for you. So we said, you can eat whatever you want between, you know, 8 and 6, but between after 6 p.m., we're not going to eat anything. So that would give her 14-hour intermittent eating, I know, fasting window. Mm-hmm. And the results were amazing. Her blood sugar, fasting insulin levels, cholesterol, everything improved, and we're able to avoid medications. So this is a perfect example how customizing a treatment plan, combining best from Eastern and Western medicine, can really give you lasting results.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. And I'm sure, I mean, you helped her so much probably by staying off all those medications and just kind of making lifestyle changes really to kind of promote that health. One of the things I'm wondering, do you ever deal with patients that are kind of skeptical to these approaches and are more just like, give me the medicine? And how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So there are always people who say, what is the science behind it? And I always say, what we're practicing is actually cutting edge science. This is the science that people are still, you know, the results are of these studies are coming out as we speak, but the training for doctors is 20, 30 years old. Like, it's 30 years old at this point, right? So what we are reading in the textbooks right now is studies from like 20, 30 years ago. So that's how we're getting trained. We're not actually putting into place the latest guidelines, the latest science. So I'll give you an example. American College of Physicians actually came out with their guidelines for treating low back pain a few years ago. And they said first line treatment for treating low back pain is things like yoga, meditation, acupuncture, before you even prescribe an NSAID, mm-hmm. right? But how many people, you know, number two complaint in this country is low back pain. It follows, you know, abdominal pain is number one often, or it always goes back and forth. But abdominal pain, low back pain, everyone has in this country, right? So now imagine we're talking about millions of people in this country going to their doctors, and what are they getting? They're getting prescriptions for NSAIDs. They're getting prescriptions for opioids, even though the latest guidelines are saying that's not first-line therapy. Right. So I always say what we're practicing is actually at the forefront of medicine. It's completely backed by science. And we're bringing all the latest data and putting it into practice to make it easy for patients to get the benefit. So it's quite the opposite. So I say, you know, and again, I know that people are just looking for the pill. This is not it. But it's really for people who are so motivated. We don't want to turn them away. We want to encourage and empower them.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And that was also one of my big takeaways from your book. And what I really loved is how you kind of spelled it out really simply using very simple like figures and tables and diagrams. One of the ones that actually really stood out to me was the diagram about the four pillars of intentional health. I was wondering if you can kind of share with our audience like what those four pillars are and how you use them for kind of overarching advice for your patients.
Yeah. So these four pillars include nutrition, so it's diet, then exercise or movement, and then you have sleep, and then lastly, stress management. So any patient you'll ever see in your practice, doesn't matter what specialty you're in, where you practice, I can assure you that these four pillars of health are vital to how they're going to do in the future, right? So whether they already have some diseases like diabetes, cancer, whatever it might be, addressing these four pillars will only give you better results with any treatment you're prescribing to the patient. So I encourage all of you to think about how are you going to ask about these four pillars every time you meet a new patient. So ask them about their diet. Do they have a preference? What do they eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner? Ask them how many hours of sleep do they get? Do they wake up often? Do they feel rested when they wake up? Then ask them how much physical activity are they getting? Ask them, are they counting their steps? You know, they can look on the phone or they can wear something like a Fitbit. And then lastly, ask them, just like we asked for about pain levels, ask them to rate their stress level from 0 to 10 and track that over time and include that into your HPI and routine follow-ups every time you see the patient. Because I've seen patients over and over again, and there are studies to back this up. They say, you know, if someone has high blood pressure, poor sleep and stress will 100% affect their blood pressure. And obviously diet and exercise can be treatments to decrease their blood pressure. So these things, addressing these four pillars, are just as important as learning all the list of medications that we typically learn in medical school to address different conditions, right? So think about it that way. This is the human part of medicine that we all really need to learn and practice.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. And that's so important. I mean, I work in radiation oncology, but I can already see like how these parallels so much into the cancer patients that I take care of. So it's really helpful. Kind of shifting gears a little bit. So one of the, you know, as I'm reading this book and kind of reading about how timing matters for when we eat and the foods and everything like that, I know you mentioned it a little when you were talking about that diabetes patient, but I'm actually wondering about healthcare workers and people that work in the hospital who have very like busy schedules, working nights sometimes. What are your recommendations for those folks and how to kind of incorporate these methods and keeping track of the circadian rhythm and things like that in the midst of these very busy schedules?
Yeah. So I've been a medical student, I've been a resident, and I know how challenging that can be. So, and what I'm grateful for is there's definitely way more awareness now than 15, 20 years ago when I was in medical school about how important self-care is. And we know physician burnout is a real problem. And we don't have to wait for people to burn out to address it. We really need to instill some of these practices much early on in our training. So what I encourage my students, my residents to do is really stick to a routine as much as possible. So even if your schedule, you know, even if you're showing up to work at 7 o'clock and you have patients, you're around, right? Fit in at least 10 minutes where you're able to get a breakfast. Fit in 10 minutes when you can get your lunch. And you can partner. So what I often would do is my co-resident, my co-intern, co-medical students, we would tag team and we can say, you know, I'm going to go away for 10 minutes, get something to eat. Here's my, you know, take care of any calls or anything that coming through. We used to have pagers back then, but now it's all on yourself and you can forward it. So I think that is really important. And a lot of medical school training programs need to emphasize this and prioritize this, that everyone needs rest, everyone needs to eat. You'll be a much better doctor if you're not hangry, right? So you're not passing out with low blood sugar. So I think the importance is you develop a schedule for yourself, try to stick to it, and you buddy up. So partner with your co-students, co-residents, and keep each other on track. That's the best way to do it.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. And yeah, I agree with you. I think it's so much about the culture. And even I, like whenever I'm working with medical students at 12 o'clock, I'm always like, all right, lunchtime, we need to, you know, take that break. So I'm hopeful that future generations of residents and med students will continue to like perpetuate that. And that, you know, thank you so much for everything that you've shared so far. I was wondering if I could kind of ask you a little bit more about your career, just because I think it's so interesting that, you know, you kind of pivoted your career from hospitalist medicine to now this outpatient integrative practice and somehow found time to write this entire book. Can you kind of talk a little bit about, I guess, how you found that motivation to kind of like switch from hospitalist to integrative medicine and how you kind of brought this to fruition?
Yeah. So I think one thing you always have to ask yourself throughout your career is this what brings me joy and purpose? I know this is not a question we're used to asking, but I ask my patients that question, like, what brings you sense of joy and purpose in life? Mm-hmm. And medicine is so much more than just a job, right? this is a profession that we dedicate a big part of our life to and many, many years to. So we absolutely have to ask that question, is this bringing me joy and purpose in life? And if the answer is no, then you have to figure out what can you do to change and really go back to what brought you into medicine in the first place. So it's never too early or too late to ask that question. So never be embarrassed or think, you know, I could have easily gone down the road and said, okay, this is a fail. I'm a failure in the sense like I'm a hospitalist. I'm not happy. I'm not performing at the level I would like. And I could have been miserable and just stuck to it, right? Instead, I said, I'm willing to take the risk because ultimately I know I will thrive in an environment where I feel like I'm fulfilling the mission that I want for myself. And the world has changed dramatically. So whatever your true passion is, there are ways to manifest it, right? So nowadays we have so many opportunities that we didn't have before. And medicine doesn't always have to be practiced in the four walls of the hospital. You can do it in so many different ways now, especially now with technology, AI, and we're blurring boundaries. So there's so much more we can do. So never stop asking that question, what brings you joy and purpose in life? And make sure you stay true to that. And I, especially the best time to ask that question is in medical school, because you haven't been sort of tainted, I feel like, with the residency and some of the things that can really sort of make you feel a little burnt out. So the idea I had when I was a medical student, you know, after having traveled through Asia for a year, like that's what I wanted. And I came back to it. So please ask yourself that question. What do you really want to do? How do you want to make an impact in this world? And there are so many paths forward. So it's just a matter of you staying true to yourself and asking those questions and reminding yourself throughout the time.
Yeah, that's such an awesome answer. And that, I mean, that really goes back to our discussion on burnout. And if you're not finding joy and purpose in what you're doing, then you're much more likely to get burned out. So yeah, thank you for that. Do you have any advice for folks that are maybe in a situation where they're, you know, in already down the line of a particular specialty or maybe working as a hospitalist or something, and they kind of want to switch gears? Like, what's your advice for that situation?
Yeah, so I'll give you some practical tips for your listeners. If you are interested in dabbling integrative medicine and or even want to switch careers into integrative medicine, there are a few options. So I really point out one very valuable resource, which is the University of Arizona's Integrative Medicine Fellowship. So, but they also have courses that can be done by medical students, for residents, and also for people who are out practicing for many years can go back and do the fellowship. The good thing is all the curriculum is online. So I've actually had people in their third year residency who started the fellowship already online.
Oh, wow.
So, and in our program at Cornell, I started a clinical fellowship for integrative medicine. So they would do the online fellowship for Arizona for 2 years while they're seeing patients with us. So they get to learn online, but at the same time, see patients and learn from other mentors. And more of these fellowships are coming about. So you definitely have this option. So starting from medical school, you can go to your program director and say, I'm interested in integrative medicine. There's a course that exists that I can take as an elective. I'm a resident and I want to take this online curriculum as an elective, and they should be able to make that happen for you. And the more interest that's generated within a program, then they can actually have dedicated curriculum that's built into your fellowship, that's built into your residency and medical school education. So that's the direction we're really going into, but I encourage you to check out their website, University of Arizona Integrative Medicine, and they even have free CME courses that you can take online. So for instance, if you're in radiation oncology, there is a bundle where you can learn about oncology and integrative medicine. If we're going to do pediatrics, there is the course on that too, which is 4 or 5 hours. Or if you're interested in learning about meditation, the research behind it, there is also resources. And the last resource I want to mention is that National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, it's part of NIH, National Institute of Health. So that is a huge subsidiary of NIH that does research in integrative medicine. So you can go on their website, nccih.gov, and they have free webinars, free grand rounds, and you can type in different conditions. You can say, okay, acupuncture, I wonder what's the latest research on acupuncture, and it will give you all the studies that have been done, studies that are enrolling currently. So you can put in different herbs or anything you're curious about. If there's a study out there, that's your go-to resource. And a lot of this is free. So I encourage you to explore and see if it's the right fit for you.
That's awesome. And it's really, you know, it's awesome to know that these options aren't just for people that are maybe in family medicine or internal medicine, but really for any specialty, including my own. So that's awesome.
So you don't have to trade any. That's why I say that you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought up that point, that it's not just for family medicine, trauma medicine. You know, we have rheumatologists, we have oncologists, nephrologists who are doing integrative medicine fellowships. So because every field requires this, you know, we're all dealing with the same patients, right? So we can't say, I'm only going to treat that cancer, but I'm going to forget about everything else. So I think the more training we have that built in into medical schools and residency, I think the better off we'll be.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Dr. Parikh, thank you so much for your time. I feel like this has been a really great conversation. I certainly have already learned so much about integrative medicine, about kind of just general career advice, and then all these options as well. I have just one last question for you as kind of a summary for our students that are listening. What do you think every medical student should know about integrative medicine?
I think every medical student should know that about integrative medicine is that as a doctor, you're not just treating someone's body. You're also treating their mind and their spirit. So, you know, health is not just an absence of disease. Health is a balance between our mind, body, spirit, community, environment, all of those components that make us who we are. So to be a true healer, to be a real doctor, we need to address all components of the people that we see.
That's such beautiful advice. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.